The Baltimore Ravens, well-documented inability to force turnovers in the postseason. Didn't they force the? I thought they forced the turnover though against the Steelers though in that wild card round, didn't they? Was that the pick six by?
I don't remember.
By Humphrey? Was that that game or the final?
That was regular season.
That was regular season. Okay, all right.
I think Vinny talked about it the other day when we had him on. I think it, like they've given the ball up like 17 times in the last like five playoff games and only forced three turnovers or something.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, is a big problem. Do you think, Jeremy, they did enough to address that
in the offseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like the thing, when I look at the Ravens defense, that some fans would go, I'd like to have more wholesale names rushing the passer. I mean, you've got Kyle Van Noy at the back end of his career who's just killing it, whether you like it or not. And that's one of the weird things is like they haven't had those household names of big-time pass rushers, but because of the scheme, they've gotten it done across the board. Like, there's a bunch of guys that can get to the quarterback. Their best pass rusher might even be Kyle Hamilton, for all we know. But that being said, yeah, I feel like they did. I mean, adding a Jaire Alexander, if he stays healthy, getting depth at the cornerback position. I think we could sit here and say, okay, weak side linebacker, maybe I'm a little concerned there. And what, maybe another depth piece on the defensive line. I saw Christian Wilkinson, is it Wilkins? Christian Wilkins got released by the Raiders. They said he did something really out of pocket, and one of his former teammates said, yeah, that dude's a little he's a little weird. He's a little fruity. He does some things. Yeah. I'm wondering what he did in that locker room to get... He got released.
Released. He's a football player.
I don't know if he was going around like playing bongos on people's butts or balls or whatever. You know, something was going on in that, right?
Or walking around naked, moving his hips out, doing the Dak Prescott thing.
They just said he's a weird dude, but that guy can play football.
And he got released.
Yeah. I think they did enough.
You think they did enough? This is what Ravens defensive coordinator Zach Orr had to say on the topic.
First thing, man, we just teach it, man. We getting better at teaching it, teaching in the classroom, showing opportunities on film, showing how to get the football out, understanding how important it is. And I think Coach Harbaugh has done a great job this spring of talking about what's the really the impactfuls that impact the football games. And takeaways for a defense is at the top of the list. And when we take the ball away, we'll win. When we don't, we got a good chance of winning, but why put ourselves in that position? So obviously we look at it last year. We didn't take the ball away enough. We had zero takeaways in the playoffs, and we, us as defensive coaches and players, we look at it as the reason why we didn't get to where we wanted to get to. So we're talking about it every single day. We're teaching it. We're drilling it, and we're making our guys aware of how important it is. And, you know, it's not just me talking about it. It's the every coach is talking about it, even on the offense. Just think about it. If we take the football away and we keep giving our offense and LJ more opportunities to score, we'll be in good shape.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think people bring up scheme when you don't have the name pass rushers, right? Like, we've said this before. Steph Curry is in a phenomenal scheme, right? But Steph Curry would be great wherever he went. And I feel like this scheme that you've seen that's been created by former defensive coordinator and then now like watching it, it's almost like, okay, we watched Greg Roman and how he ran the football and what he did. We took that and then installed a passing game with it because that's something Greg couldn't do. With Mike McDonald, I almost said Mike McDaniel. I always do that with those two cats. When he left, he had a great scheme as far as a pass rush. People were killing him year one, and in year two, it's like, they won the Triple Crown on defense. Yeah. Go name me one of those pass rushers. Yeah. And I'm not talking about a Baltimore fan. I'm talking about a football fan from out of town. Nobody's like pointing at going, oh my God, you had this guy and you had that guy. Jadeveon Clowney was the best name, and he was probably the weakest pass rusher they had. Mm-hmm. So I just go back and I look at certain things and say, yes, I do think this is ultimately scheme. There's nothing wrong with scheme, but if you put great players in a scheme, a lot of times it works out way better than what anything you could possibly imagine.
Yeah. So you think they did enough in the offseason?
I mean, I think the scheme here is great. Again, they don't have the names. Did they go out and get a premier pass rusher? No. But again, you have constraints. This team, when we talk about it, the weaknesses, if you want to say that, we don't know about kicker this year. We don't know about left guard.
Right.
And I think you could even point at some of the depth spots as far as the defensive line or even weak side linebacker and say, okay, how is this going to look? I don't think any of them are weaknesses. I just think they're not as good as the other spots. Does that make sense, or kind of like, at least it's fair in my mind when I look at them?
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the scheme. I think you have talented players, And sometimes when you have talented players who are versatile, scheme is all you need.
Geno Stone should be sending 20% of his paycheck to Seattle every year.
Seattle?
Yeah, that's where Mike McDonald is. He got him paid.
I got you.
He got him paid. He was, and again, tip of the cap to Geno. He was in the right place at the right time, but a lot of that had to do with the scheme. He made the plays.
Yeah. And that's why I think when you have, and again, he's the example. He's a talented player. He's talented.
Yeah.
Is he as good as his stats? No. But he's talented. You put talented athletes in a good scheme, dude, you have things that could work for you. And I think that's where the Ravens are. I agree with you. I think this is going to be a good year, big year for Zach Orr. I don't know what he's going to do without Dean Pease. No,
what are you talking about? I got Chuck Pagano.
I just want to get you going.
He's a better version of Dean Pease. Chuck Pagano.
It should be fun. It should be fun on defense. There'd be no reason the Ravens shouldn't get to the Super Bowl. They're going to have, in my opinion, the best offense in the league and the top five defense in the league.
Right now, they're the only team that I've seen on paper that is projected top three offense, top three defense.
Really?
Nobody else in the top five of both. We shall see. I mean, look, it's all setting up, and I think that's why you're in Harbaugh go. It's not Super Bowl or bust. Hey, it is Super Bowl or bust. Like, you can sit here and sell it any way you want, and I understand that you're telling people that. And, oh, by the way, if you're saying it's Super Bowl or bust, you've never won anything. Okay. I mean, that's more of him talking down to people.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you've had the most talented team the past 2 years. Now it's going into the third year. You need to come away with some hardware, at least get to the dance. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there'll be lots of criticism if they get there and don't win at all. However, I think this city will proverbially burn down if they don't get there at all.
Yeah. I mean, because
not literally.
Yeah. People aren't going to be looting or whatever because the Ravens don't win. But he's just saying from a sports standpoint.
They save that for winning.
Yes. After you've gone through what we went through with the Orioles this year unexpectedly, if you have any sort of disappointing season, and again, the only things that you can do to improve is to A, get to the Super Bowl and B, win it. You ain't got anything else to show us. You went to the AFC Championship. You hosted the game. You lost to an inferior team. You know, you went on the road, you faced Buffalo, you lost, in my mind, to an inferior team.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, a team that you beat their asses earlier in the year and damn near ran for, what, over 200 yards against them. Mm-hmm. I go back to that game and even the last few playoff games, and you're watching, you're going, did that really just happen? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just weird. I don't blame any one individual. Like, even coaching, I don't even blame them. You look back at it and look back at it. Look back at it. Sorry. I had a little 2 Chainz on my mind. I'm just saying, like, to see a ball get fumbled through the end zone, to see, you know, a player drop a pass down the sideline where he probably could have walked in the end zone from about 60 yards out, to see Mark Andrews fumble it midfield and then drop a 2-point conversion. Lamar throws 4 picks and he throws one of the worst passes he's thrown all year when he threw it up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you ain't done that all year. Why'd you do that there?
Right.
And I don't think it's singularly anybody's fault.
Collectively, it becomes a culture, though.
Yes, exactly. You said it better than I did, and I just rambled for 14 minutes.
It becomes a culture. It does. And that's what I'm worried about. Can they shake the culture? 410-583-1057 is the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. We're not done with baseball for the day. Ryan Ripken joins us at 7:45, but on the other side. 2 MVPs. Jeremy would say he deserved a third MVP. Already under his belt, Jeremy. But can we say Lamar Jackson is just entering the prime of his career? Scary thought. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.
I mean, everything goes through him. Everything we do starts with his confidence in what we do. He already has confidence himself. He's an elite player. But what we do to make sure that we're building it to where when he gets ready to go on Sunday, he can perform at an elite level and let his talent shine. That he's worked so hard to get to this point, which he really has. And he said it, I read it yesterday, he really is just, he's still coming. He's still a young player, really a quarterback in my mind.
That's Todd Monken on his quarterback. His quarterback won't be 29 until the postseason. Postseason. He's going to play the entire regular season at the age of 28. He turns 29 January the 7th. When's the last game? Regular season game. Joseph has a schedule back there.
What do you got, Joe?
TBA right now.
Okay, well, what week is it, you know?
Yeah.
17, 18.
It's probably like right around you said. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. So, I mean, that Jeremy,
yeah.
Last year, Lamar Jackson, I know these numbers have been spoken before, he completed 67% of his passes for 4,172 yards, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, an amazing passer rating of 119.6, which led the league. His average yards per attempt led the league. For those of you who think he's nickels and dimes, 10.15. His yards average were 8.8, led the league as well. So can we say that Lamar Jackson is just entering his prime as a passer?
I think so. I mean, I really believe that. And it's been, we haven't had him in this league for all that long. And at some point, you're going to reach where your pinnacle is. And it's how long can you stay at that level or be close to that level, right? I don't know that he'll ever throw 41 touchdowns and 4 picks in a season.
Right.
But I would not be shocked if he came in this year and threw 45 and 3 interceptions, because I think he's that good. And I say this every year. I didn't want Lamar on the team. I did not want them to draft him. Not because I thought he was a bad player, but I wanted them to go in a different direction with players in that draft.
Right.
Especially when they drafted Hayden Hurst first. I'm going, you guys could have drafted Derwin James and had the best safety in the league, and you draft this cat, and then all of a sudden trade back in. I said, this is what you're doing. You watch Lamar year one, and you're going, some of this is fun, but really, this is going to be your offense moving forward. And then year two, it's like, no. As I've said before, Happy learned how to putt. Like, not that he didn't know how to throw. It's just like they took the reins off of him and said, hey, let's see what you can do.
I think they took the reins off him. But I think if Lamar, if you ask Lamar to admit it, he did what Michael Vick didn't do. He worked on his game.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Jackson is a better passer now than he was when he first got drafted. It's not just, oh, we let him do this and he could always do it. I don't think he could always do it at this level. I thought he was always a proficient NFL passer. He's now an elite NFL passer.
Yeah.
I don't think he was elite when he got drafted. He was good enough. Lamar Jackson is what many people thought he would not be, a worker. Lamar Jackson is what many people thought he was not, very intelligent. You put those two things together. You put an intelligent football player, intelligent individual, and hard work together. Oh, by the way, he might be the best athlete in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things are combustible. Those three things are just insane. So as the physical ability starts to level out a little bit, which does when you start getting to your 30s and all, now he becomes more cerebral? Man. Whoa. Lamar Jackson's passing numbers moving forward, Jeremy, may break passing records.
And it's funny, too, because, again, I've been one of these guys for years that say wins and losses don't go by quarterback's name. But I'm a Peyton Manning truther, and I don't know there's been a guy that's had a greater impact on the entire offense than Lamar Jackson. Like, it doesn't have to be Derrick Henry back there, but you see when you put one of the best running backs in football next to him, what happens?
Yeah.
Like, I've talked about these efficiency charts that Warren Sharp puts out all the time,
right.
And there's always these one dots all the way up in the right-hand corner, and you see Derrick Henry's name or Lamar Jackson's name there, and what is it? What makes it so different? It's because they've been so efficient. When you're talking about quarterback numbers and why I get in this MVP race BS that happened last year was because he was so off the charts good. He had a higher ADOT. His numbers were better than Josh Allen's across the board except for rushing touchdowns, because for once in his life, he didn't have to rush the ball inside the 5-yard line. It's like, I got 22 back there. I'm going to give him the ball as many times as I can. And, there's something to be said about that. Like, could he be selfish down there and want to get some touchdowns for himself and get it? Of course he could.
It gets me how people are the Lamar haters. Well, he had that great year because he had Derrick Henry. Do you all actually research anything? Derrick Henry put up some of the best numbers of his career because he had Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at this, the iron sharpens iron. This thing wasn't one-sided. You know, I mean, you look, Derrick Henry's numbers went back to his youth days because he had number 8 back there with him.
Lamar Jackson made Derrick Henry a better runner because of that mesh point and what he's capable of.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry made Lamar Jackson a better passer because of the play action pass. It's
a win-win. Hand in hand. Yeah, why are you making this thing sound one-sided? I mean,
because when you need to debate this, and let's say you're a Bills fan that wants to tell you, oh, you had Derrick Henry, and then it's like, well, go back to this year and look at this year when he won the MVP, and this guy had a better number. okay, go back and look at all of it. Like, I just had an argument with somebody who was saying Dak Prescott should have won the MVP, Lamar's second one. And I'm going, hey, come on, man.
Hey, by the way, when Lamar won his second one, he didn't have Derrick Henry.
He doesn't need him to win an MVP.
No.
He just should have got his third one with him. That's all it was.
It's like we can't. It goes back to the whole thing about us trading in Major League Baseball. We can't have a situation where both sides win. Somebody's got to lose.
I got news for you. According to a lot of people out there, no matter what Mike Elias does at the trade deadline,
he's going to lose.
Oh, that's a terrible trade.
And according to some people, no matter what Lamar Jackson does, it's never going to be good enough.
I saw someone, God,
they may be
it?
The same people.
Mets fans were going, Orioles got fleeced. And then other people, there were writers around it when they made the trade with Soto. And you said Soto had a nice, nice.
Yeah, last night.
Nice outing last night. And they were saying he's got fleeced. And people are going, I see other people that have no idea what they're talking about go, I've never even heard of these two guys that the Orioles traded for. Yeah, because they're minor leaguers.
Yeah.
Guess who else hasn't heard of them? A lot of freaking people. Even Mets fans haven't heard of some of these guys.
The baseball experts like the trade.
Yes, but I'm saying like there's so many people out there that have an opinion. You're allowed to have your opinion, but it's based on nothing. It's based. There's no facts whatsoever. I've never heard of him, so he must be bad.
Yeah. The baseball experts like the trade. I mean, everything I've read from baseball people.
As they said, they got one surefire thing, and then they have another one where it's like, hey, if this hits, it's going to be boom, but we don't know if it's going to hit.
But don't you think in that situation, as long as you get one surefire thing for Soto, that's good?
Man, I'm okay with taking shots on anybody with upside. Like, people are bitching about the Vance Honeycutt pick because he's not hitting right now. They took him because they took him on upside where they were drafting, saying, if this works out, he could become an amazing power hitter. I got no issues with a lot of the things that went on. There are some free agent signings that I would complain about with the Orioles, but I'm not in that group with a lot of people that want Elias gone.
So Shamar Stewart signs a fully guaranteed deal with the Bengals. We'll talk about that at 8:15. Who won that, Jeremy? But on the other side, did Nick Kurtz post one of the greatest rookie performances in sports history on Friday night?
Nicholas was good.
He was?
Yeah, Nicholas Kurtz. You ain't going to catch me. Nope. Talking about Steve Kerr's son, Nicholas Kerr, and Nick Kurtz. You're not going to hear Nicholas Kurtz. That's how it is.
Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.
Swing and a drive. Deep to left. He's done it four times.
What a magical night for the Big Amish. Smooth as butter, baby.
That's NBC Sports Bay Area with the call. Nick Kurtz with 6-for-6, four home runs. And you have a stat that is even more rare.
Yeah, so they were talking about hitting four home runs in a game, and everybody was like, oh, my God, it's so impressive. And, yes, it is. There's no question. But he did something that's only been done 8 other times in baseball, and that was score 6 runs in one game. And that's ridiculous, man. When you think so, getting on base every time and making sure you come around. And it was great hearing that call, too, because I don't know if you guys heard it over the weekend where the A's announcer, Carey, had to apologize to everyone. There was a home run hit to right center field. And he's like, it's way back. Oh, it's a foul ball. And the guy's rounding the bases, and he's like,
right center field?
Yes. He said he lost it in the lights.
And then the A's posted the home run on their Twitter account and removed his call and put the radio call in instead.
Oh, he went on. He was getting killed online, and he did the thing. He's like, yeah, I screwed up, man. I'm sorry. And everybody was like, man, it doesn't matter. But back to the point at hand, Kurtz scoring 6 runs in one game. This kid's turned out to be a monster. And right now, barring anything catastrophic happening, he's going to win the Rookie of the Year. He's going to win it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been so many spots, though. But you were talking about other big games that really stand out. I'll throw you two baseball-wise, and you tell me if it still counts because it's the postseason for a rookie.
Yeah, it's got it. Yeah, I got postseason. Okay. I got a postseason in mind.
Mad Bum, game 4 against the Rangers. 8 innings pitched, 3 hits, 10 Ks. People were talking about CeCe Sabathia going into the postseason. He had one of those greatest stretches of going on 3-day rest for a rental team for the Brewers.
The Brewers, yeah.
He was hitting for him, he was pitching for him, and he basically won a series by himself. Mad Bum was kind of that same type of player for the Giants where he would come out, and it's like, if you're facing him in the postseason, good luck.
Yeah.
He was so dominant. The other one that stands out is Andrew Jones against the Yankees game one.
Two home runs.
3 for 4, 2 bombs, 5 ribbies, and that's in a World Series the same way Mad Bum was.
Didn't they go up 2-0 and end up losing that series?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Who else you got?
So in the NBA, how about Wilt Chamberlain? He scored 58 points in his rookie year. Twice.
40 rebounds in one of those games. 42 rebounds. 58 points, 42 rebounds.
His numbers don't even look like they're real. Like, it's like when you see Cy Young's numbers and you're going, he pitched how many games? You're like, Wilt did what? Who was he playing against? He was just so dominant. Magic Johnson, 1980 NBA Finals, Game 6. 42 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. Is that when they, is that the game they asked him to play center, or was that the six? That was the Sixers later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that game,
what
there.
What a waste.
What?
It's a guy would have been a good porn name.
Magic Johnson? Yeah. It would have been.
It's a waste, man.
Almost better than Peter North.
Yeah.
And then here, two football ones. C.J. Stroud, 470 yards, most passing yards in a game for a rookie. Uh-huh. But the one that really stood out to me was Adrian Peterson, 296 yards, single game. It's still a record.
Okay. I only did two.
I just couldn't stop
both
writing.
Of, both of them out of football.
Good.
Thanksgiving.
Randy Moss.
He only had 3 catches, but for 163 yards and 3 touchdowns because the Cowboys didn't draft him.
You remember who they drafted
King
over?
Petty. King Petty.
Randy Moss was sitting back there and said, they took who?
Who'd they take?
Kevin Dyson went in front of me?
That's right.
He went in front of me? You know, there's all kinds
King Petty. And the other one is football. And I remember watching this game thinking, who the hell is this? Super Bowl. Washington, then Redskins. Tim Smith.
Oh, God.
204 yards rushing against the Denver Broncos.
Say
rookie.
What?
Yeah, yeah, from Texas Tech.
Uh-huh.
Those two performances, to me, I don't. Only reason I had to look it up is to look up the exact numbers, but I didn't have to look up. Okay, who had to? No, I remember. Those are the two that stick in my mind, Jeremy. I remember all those other ones you talked
about. As soon as you saw my eyes.
Yeah,
right up.
I don't remember Will Chamberlain. I wasn't alive. But those other ones, I do remember. But this one, those two, I'm like, I remember looking at, who was this? Hey, who had Tim Smith on that card?
Well, look at this. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain.
He could have been the MVP. I mean, I understand why Doug Williams was, because Doug Williams had a phenomenal game and the moment. What Doug Williams represented in that game as well.
Yeah.
He represented a change, you know.
That was against the Broncos, too.
Yeah, it's the same game.
Same game, yeah. How about Wilt, though? On the night that he dropped 58 and 40, he satisfied 5 women. Does that add into it as a rookie? That's pretty impressive numbers. This cat said he slept with over 20,000 women, and I'm not even questioning it. I think it's true. That's unbelievable.
You got some over there, Joseph?
Kerry Wood, 20 strikeout game.
Oh, yeah.
And Clay Buchholz threw a no-hitter in his second Clay MLB Buttholes. Start.
Yeah.
Against who?
The
Orioles. Yeah. You know how I remember that?
You were there?
No, I was not there. Was that like September?
Yeah, it was pretty late in the season.
I remember that because that's when I was doing play-by-play for Morgan. They played Rutgers that weekend. And I was up in New Jersey in a hotel
they get
watching that game.
September 1st, 2007.
Yeah.
Look at you. Did you tell him that in his ear? This guy don't remember anything, man.
I remember that stupid stuff.
I know.
Those are the things that I remember.
Was it Friday in the parking lot? We're sitting out there talking. It's like, man, remember the dumbest things. Like, we'll be sitting there, and I could sit here and name a movie quote from some random-ass movie, and then you'll ask me something important. Like, I don't know. And it's something you should know.
No, we're really burying the fact that Bobo Holman threw a no-hitter in his first start ever.
Bubba Holman did?
Yeah, Bobo Holman.
Is that
what year was that?
1953.
Who is that?
I don't even know. His name is Alva Lee Holloman. Sorry, his nickname was Bobo.
Oh, okay. Bobo. Bobo's not so stupid.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the face. So you think Nick Kurtz wins the Rookie of the Year?
I don't think there's any question, unless he just... I like doing this, knock on wood, gets hurt. Sounds like the Aaron Judge thing sounded really serious this weekend. It sounds like it's not as bad as they thought, but still something you don't like to hear if you're the Yankees. Because at that point, Cal Raleigh had jumped to -175 in the MVP race.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the new news came out about Judge, now he's still the favorite, but it's just slightly. And with Nick Kurtz, I haven't checked the Rookie of the Year like numbers. But who's doing what he's – I mean, he's just been incredible. And you might even look over at his teammate, that shortstop there that started the All-Star game thinking he might do it, the free swinger. What'd they say? His on-base percentage was 380. His batting average was 380. The kid didn't walk for a while there.
The crazy part about Hurts, though, he's only played in 67 games and has 23 home runs.
That's what I'm saying.
His OPS is 1.061. Is he really that guy?
I don't think he's really that guy, but I don't have anything right now to say that he's not going to be really
good.
Well,
you don't have to be that guy to win the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
You had a great rookie season.
I mean, Luis Hill won it when he had no business winning it, but that's fine.
So what chaps your ass more?
Huh? Oh, the Lamar thing. Like, okay. There's no debate in the Lamar thing in my mind. The other one, I'll listen to you. You're still wrong. It should have been Kowser, even though his roller coaster season, it was just better than Wyatt Langford and Luis Hill. So when they gave it to Hill, I'm going, they didn't give it to Langford? Like, even, oh, you know who else stepped up and should have gotten it over Hill? Austin Wells, the catcher.
Yeah,
there.
The catcher, yeah.
He had a higher WAR. He was better than him down the stretch. I don't know how Hill won it, but whatever.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. We got World of Stupid at 8 o'clock with Jeremy Kahn. Again, as I tell you all the time, I tell you about that. We tease that to give you a warning.
There is some good stuff today, too.
That's your warning. But on the other side, Ryan Ripken joins us. We'll ask him to weigh in on that. Also, all-time rookie performances, put him on the spot. Also, Orioles taking 2 out of 3 over the weekend from the Colorado Rockies. Pitching was unreal the last 2 days. And I know you're saying it was against the Rockies, but nonetheless, 2 out of 3 is 2 out of 3. Ryan Ripken up next, right here on The Fan. 7:46 in the a.m., Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Rob Long, Jeremy Kahn, Ed Norris on vacation.
Tell him.
Joining us right now from the Ryan Ripken Show. Courtesy of Window Nation Guest Hotline, he is Ryan Ripken. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How we doing?
Doing
good.
Well, man. Look, I know I'm putting you on the spot with this, but we were just talking about this. Nick Kurtz. Great performance the other night. 4 home runs, 6 for 6, scored 6 runs. Can you, in your mind right now, think of any rookie performances that stand out to you?
Gosh, well, that one arguably is one of the best performances, single game performances ever.
Yeah.
Right now, even for a rookie.
Yeah.
And I think he was like 5 feet away from another home run, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, deepest part of the park out there in Houston. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to like circle through a little bit on some rookies.
Because I came up with 2 football ones. I came up with Randy Moss on Thanksgiving, 3 catches for 3 touchdowns against the Dallas Cowboys because he was pissed off they didn't draft him. And one, I don't think you were alive for, Tim Smith in the Super Bowl, 204 yards rushing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I was trying to think, it might have been the year after. When did Adrian Peterson run for?
That was his rookie year, 296.
That was rookie year.
Yeah. Yeah, so that one sticks out to me.
Yeah.
Of the rookie performances, right?
Yeah.
Adrian Peterson's number, because I remember watching that and just being amazed. And I think I know it happens in baseball. Like, we have those moments where guys come up and can have, like, that stretch. I think in baseball, if we're doing that now, I remember when Yasiel Puig came up and just being like, whoa, like this, like, the stretch run that he had. But as far as like performances, like it's just so rare, I feel like, in baseball to see a guy go out there and dominate so well. I mean, honestly, probably go to last year with Paul Skeens, for being completely honest. That's probably the one where you're like, wow, like that was unbelievable. But for one single game, Nick, the A's got some young talent. I know they've underperformed, but they got some guys that can play ball out there.
Yeah, I was telling Rob that Nicholas Kurtz, 6 runs in one game, too, which has only been done 8 times before. He was the 9th to do it, so pretty impressive. Ryan, as we get closer to the trade deadline, we've got Eflin pitching tonight, Morton tomorrow. We've seen 2 trades already go down. How crazy do you think it gets? Because I think there's going to be, including the 2 that have already happened, 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of people are available. Right. And I think it's just going to be what the price tags are, which teams are going to be desperate or willing to pay the price, and it does certainly feel like starting pitching is always at a premium. Bullpen arms are still at a premium. I still look back to the, last week of trading Soto, and so many teams want power arms or, you know, for Soto's case, it was a power lefty. But, you know, that's what teams are going to want down the stretch. And they want veterans. Like, they want guys that have typically been around a little bit. So, you know, Charlie Morton's going to get a lot of buzz, and so will Zach Eflin. Since Zach's healthy now, that definitely teams know what he can do when he's feeling good and at full strength. So, yeah, I mean, I also wouldn't be surprised if we see some things come down to Wednesday, Thursday as it moves forward, right? Because I think if you're the Orioles and you're Mike Elias and you want to make moves, absolutely, but they're going to try to force the hand and try to drive up the price. Why? Because there are teams that are sitting there going, who else do we need? What does it cost? All right, screw it. Let's make this deal. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised seeing six or seven moves, but I also say I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's two or three and the Orioles just didn't want to settle for anything less. But no doubt, so many teams want ball. So many teams around baseball want Oriole players if they're available. Why? They're chasing usual veterans that they know that these teams are going to need when they move towards the postseason.
Ryan Ripken joins us, Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Ryan, listen, this has been a disappointing season. I don't like the way it's gone. But to me, there's some excitement in it that there are going to be some trades, and some of these veterans are gone. And we're finally going to see some of the guys that we've been waiting to see, the Sam Basayos of the world, the Dylan Beavers. I'm looking forward to seeing some of these guys come up.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at the silver linings, right? Your goal was to win the AL East, try to make a World Series run. You know, I'm not going to say there isn't a chance anymore, but we know that window has extremely shrunk, and we're going to have to see baseball history. So the odds, you know, for the Orioles, you have to look towards the future, right? And one thing that I always thought with the O's is when they came out and were competitive in 22, you know, that changed the kind of thought process in my mind of how you let guys go out there and play. Because you felt like in 23 when the team played well, you owed it to the team to try to win games, and it sometimes sacrificed the development of some of your young guys. Well, you kind of have a reset here for a rest of the season, and Robbie made a good point. You got to know what you have. And that's why when I saw Kobe Mayo not playing much in July, that was frustrating to see. Not because I didn't understand, but this is such a valuable time for this organization. And I hope people understand it.
And by the way, he is swinging well right now.
He is. And I think that's the point right there of why it was frustrating. I know when it's a full slate of guys healthy, where do you play these guys? But if you're Baltimore, and my thing with development the silver lining where Baltimore has the advantage, and they're saying, well, go and sign guys. Well, if you don't go out and sign these big contracts, you got to then use your advantage. And the Orioles have drafted very talented players, but now you have to let them be showcased and let them go out there and experience it. And if you can pick those guys now and they can go out there and play well for the last 2+ months, and you can sit there and really evaluate where they stand moving forward, that could long-term launch you into a position that you were hoping for all along. So I'm with you. I think that there's a lot of opportunity for guys. You know, and honestly, I'm not worried about the position player side. I think they really need to figure out more on the pitching. But I am excited to see that. And it's not – I want to reiterate this. It's a lost season in the sense of chasing the World Series. But this time is as detrimental for any time, because this is how players learn to become very good big league players when they go through real big struggles.
Do you think, a lot of people talked about all the apologies that should be given out to Orioles players that have looked like trash and then turned it around and looked amazing. Do you think Tyler O'Neill's done enough that he could possibly be moved?
I don't know if a team wants to pick up the option, or that Tyler O'Neill would have the player option, right? So is the team going to be comfortable saying we're going to pay a guy $16 million, not because Tyler O'Neill isn't talented, but his track record is he has not stayed healthy. You know, like, that's my biggest thing. I think Tyler O'Neill is a good player. But last year, even he played 100 games and hit 30 home runs. So you signed him knowing that there was an injury history. So I don't think that teams, if they were to move, it would have to be some sort of deal where maybe the Orioles would have to cover X amount of the finances, you know, moving forward and all that. But yeah, that one I see hard for a team, especially, like I said, down the stretch here. What does a team want? They want a guy that they can depend on, that they feel confident with. And I think Tyler O'Neill is going to finish the season strong, but there is going to be that concern just because of how many injuries have happened so far this year.
Hey, man, thanks a lot, Ryan. Tell us we can find you for the rest of the week.
Oh, Baltimore baseball tonight. See that tonight, actually. Ryan Rifkin Show Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on YouTube X, wherever you get a podcast. And I'll be ripping it. It's Ripping It with Ryan with Bob Haney on Friday.
Hey, Ryan, how you all handling the doubleheader tomorrow?
That's a great question. I guess I should figure that out.
They want you here at 6 a.m.
Talk to some people. So.
Hey, by the way, with Ryan's podcast, I mean, I think you have a great crew along with you. I've said that to you multiple times, but you're getting some great guests, man, and I see that thing building, so you're doing an awesome job with that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. And yeah, I get to hang out and talk with you guys every Monday.
Sorry about that.
I appreciate you, all right?
All right, Ryan, have a good one, man.
You guys. See you guys.
410-583-1057.
I mean this when I say it, because like we've had long talks about his podcast whenever he was in.
He's growing up.
Oh, yeah.
He's growing up.
I love the people he surrounds himself with. Yeah. He's got a little bit of everything, baseball, football, some humor in there as well. Yeah, it's really good.
Mike Bordick joins us to talk more baseball at 8:45. Also, talking about the Shamar Stewart contract as well. At 8:15, but on the other side, we get stupid with Jeremy Kahn.
Yeah, we're going to get into a couple of different things. One of which, how about some nightmare fuel, a roller coaster that just freezes and what they told people to do. And it's the second time it's happened with this roller coaster. No. I'll tell you that. And another story about I'm just going to read you the headline. Killed it on the spot. Infant bites cobra to death. I'll explain when we come back on the World of Stupid.